Let's turn to Luke, chapter 20. And it came about on one of those days, while he was teaching the people in the temple and preaching the gospel, that the chief priests and the scribes with the elders confronted him. They spoke, saying to him, "Tell us by what authority you are doing these things, or who is the one who gave you this authority?" And he answered and said to them, "I shall also ask you a question, and you tell me. Was the baptism of John from heaven or from men?" And they reasoned among themselves, saying, "If we say from heaven, he will say, 'Why do you not believe him?' But if we say from men, all the people will stone us to death, for they are convinced that John was a prophet." And they answered that they did not know where it came from. And Jesus said to them, "Neither will I tell you by what authority I do these things." And I began to tell the people this parable. A man planted a vineyard and rented out the vine growers and went on a journey for a long time. And at the harvest time, he sent a slave to the vine growers in order that they might give him some of the produce of the vineyard. But the vine growers beat him and sent him away empty-handed. And he proceeded to send another slave, and they beat him also and treated him shamefully and sent him away empty-handed. And he proceeded to send a third, and this one also they wounded and cast out. And the owner of the vineyard said, "What shall I do? I will send my beloved son. Perhaps they will respect him." But when the vine growers saw him, they reasoned with one another, saying, "This is the heir. Let us kill him, that the inheritance may be ours." They threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. What therefore will the owner of the vineyard do to them? He will come and destroy these vine growers and will give the vineyard to others. And when they heard it, they said, "May it never be." But he looked at them and said, "What then is this that is written? The stone which the builders rejected, this became the chief cornerstone. Everyone who falls on that stone will be broken to pieces, but on whomever it falls, it will scatter him like dust." And the scribes and the chief priests tried to lay hands on him. At that very hour, they feared the people, for they understood that he spoke this parable against them. And they watched him and sent spies who pretended to be righteous in order that they might catch him in some statement so as to deliver him up to the rule and authority of the governor. And they questioned him, saying, "Teacher, we know that you speak and teach correctly, and you are not partial to any, but teach the way of God in truth. Is it lawful for us to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But he detected their trickery and said to them, "Show me a denarius. Whose likeness and inscription does it have?" They said, "Caesar's." And he said to them, "Then render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And they were unable to catch him in a saying in the presence of the people, and marveling at his answer, they became silent. Now there came to him some of the Sadducees, who say there is no resurrection. And they questioned him, saying, "Teacher, Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies, having a wife, and he is childless, his brother should take the wife and raise up offspring to his brother. Now there were seven brothers, and the first took a wife and died childless, and the second and the third took her, and the same way all seven died, leaving no children. Finally, the woman died also. In the resurrection, therefore, which one's wife will she be? For all seven had her as wife." And Jesus said to them, "The sons of this age marry and are given in marriage, but those who are considered worthy to attain to that age and the resurrection from the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage. For neither can they die anymore, for they are like angels and are sons of God, being sons of the resurrection. But that the dead are raised, even Moses showed in the passage about the burning bush, where he calls the Lord the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Now he is not the God of the dead, but of the living, for all live to him." And some of the scribes answered and said, "Teacher, you have spoken well." For they did not have courage to question him any longer about anything. And they said to them, "How is it that they say the Christ is David's son? For David himself says in the book of Psalms, 'The Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I make thine enemies a footstool for thy feet.' David therefore calls him Lord, and how is he his son?" And all while the disciples were listening, he said to his disciples, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and love respectful greetings in the marketplaces and chief seats in the synagogues and places of honor at banquets, who devour widows' houses and for appearance' sake offer long prayers. These will receive greater condemnation." Amen. Now, Luke 20 is basically a part of Jesus' teachings while he's in Jerusalem. Later on, he'll move in chapter 21, actually, is a very famous discourse. It's probably the second famous one that Jesus gave. The first one was the Beatitudes, right? The Sermon on the Mount. This next one is the Olivet Discourse that we'll go over tomorrow. And it's probably his most second famous speech or teaching that he gave to his people. Now, if you notice the structure of Luke 20, this is continually Jesus is now being confronted by the Pharisees, the lawyers, the Sadducees, the religious people, the wealthy people, the people in charge, and it's almost like if you look wave after wave, it's different people are coming up to him to challenge him on his authority, to trick him into some kind of saying. In the Sadducees' case, to try to get them to get him to get him on their side, So I'll get into some of these things. And so the first one, the Pharisees come up and they ask him, so, you know, where do you get your authority from? You know, you say all these wonderful things. You know, you're always criticizing us. And so we want to know, where do you get your authority from? And he turns the question on them and he begins to talk about John, you know. And the first passage is pretty self-explanatory. And so then as he goes on, then he tells them this parable, right? Remember, Jesus continually told stories, but they were loaded stories, right? He told tales and things to really emphasize a point and to really almost kind of draw that dagger deeper into them. And he tells about the parable of the vine growers. And here's this rich man. He had much land, and he lent the land to these people. You know, and for a picture, the people are the Jews, right, the Israelites. He sent slave after slave after slave to them, and these were the prophets, right? You know, just continually says, hey, just give me, you know, a portion of what I've given you. Notice the vine grower, he didn't ask for all the land back. You know, it wasn't a kind of commandment. It wasn't something that he asked for so much. He just said, you know, this land that's mine anyway, and even the produce that's there is mine. Let me just have some of that. You know, and we can think of this in terms of tithing, or we can think of this in terms of giving to the Lord, or whatnot. And it's something that's already His, right? And He gives us, you know, resource, and He gives us, you know, the ability to cultivate the land. He gives us the land. He gives us the ability to cultivate the land and to bring and make wealth off the land. And He just says, you know, let me just have some of that. You know, and this, I mean, if you think about it, this is a great picture of offering in some ways, right? I mean, God has given us jobs. He's given us brains and intellect and education, the ability to make wealth out of the life that He has given to us. You know, and we, you know, when it comes to God, we say, no, you know, He's not asking for everything. You know what I mean? I mean, it'd be a different story. The vine grower said, get off my land, you know, give me everything you got. He's just saying, give me just a portion, you know, of these things that's, I mean, you're supposed to give to Him anyway. This is kind of rent in this situation. You know, and, you know, one after another, He sends slave after slave, prophet after prophet. And if you look throughout the history of Israel, they've killed prophets. You know, if they didn't like what they said, right, they tortured them. You know, I mean, all kinds of stuff. And so the vine grower says, okay, you know what I'll do? You know, surely they'll respect my son. Surely my heir, right, they will honor. And so he sends his son, and, you know, these vine growers kind of deceive, you know, in deception, they saw him, they reasoned with one another, said, hey, this is the heir, let's kill him. And then maybe we can get everything else. You know, and this is actually a prophetic statement that Jesus is offering up, because that's exactly what happens here, you know, to Jesus. You know, the son being given, you know, and the Jews conspired together to kill him. And so, so they threw him out, you know, and so he asked a simple question, and he asked it to these guys that he was speaking directly to, and he says, what do you think this vineyard owner will do to these vine growers? You know, I mean, what do you think he's going to do to them? And he's going to punish them. And not only is he going to punish them, but he's going to give the inheritance to somebody else. And a lot of people use this text, use this passage, you know, especially people that are more in terms of like dispensational theology, they actually use this to point the fact that God has released favor, has basically taken His favor off the Jewish people, and now He's given it to the church. You know, and I believe in some parts of that, but not fully, because Israel is still God's chosen people. You know, and so, you know, He kind of withhold His favor, and then He just released it all to the church. They're a part of the evangelical church that believes that the church is now the new Israel. You know, and I think maybe that's going a little too far, but definitely God has really given that blessing to the church now, you know, and we can talk about some of that stuff later on, you know. And if you notice that whenever Jesus is questioned or something, he does redirection, right? You know, they ask Him about something, and He goes from a whole different point, you know, to really reveal truth to them, and they see, like, oh, that's what it's all about, right? And so He leads them to another redirection. Now, he goes and, he caps off verse 17. He says, the stone which the builders rejected, this became the chief cornerstone. He's talking about Himself. There's a theme all throughout the Gospels, you know, of the stone and the rock, right? Peter will talk about the stone of stumbling, the rock of offense. You know, Jesus Himself will say, upon this rock, right, Petros, you know, I'll build my church. You know, Petra, the rock. You know, and we see that Jesus is constantly pictured himself, the symbolism, as this rock, you know, this stone or whatever you want to be. Even David in the Psalm says, take me to the rock that is higher than I. You know, and so we see that this theme always continues to go forth, and that's what he's talking about. And then here's these guys, right? Now the scribes and the Pharisees, they're unwilling now because they know every time they try to confront Jesus, he thwarts them. And he makes fools of them. And so they get other people to kind of speak on their behalf, right? False witnesses. And so they try to get him to come in trickery. And you know, they'll come flattering. Verse 21, teacher, we know that you speak and teach correctly. You are not partial to any, but teach the way of God in truth. You know, and so they're buttering him up. But Jesus sees the reception and says, who should we pay the poll tax to? Now, this was a very, very touchy issue, right, to the Jews. You know, number one, they were very greedy. You know, and so they always, you know, we shouldn't pay, you know, basically pay a tithe to Caesar. We pay tithes to the temple. You know, we already do this, and why should we, you know, do this? And there's actually a lot of Christians in the United States. In fact, you know, this will be called people like that are like part of the militia. You know, these kind of things. You know, David Koresh and that whole, you know, that are unwilling to pay taxes to the state. Because they just feel, like the Pharisees did, we just pay taxes to the temple, right, to the church. You know, and so they'll do all different things to get out of paying taxes to Uncle Sam, basically. You know, and it's almost kind of the same kind of scenario here. And it says, is it lawful? The word there, is it lawful, right, for us to pay taxes to Caesar or not? You know, because they're going by Mosaic law. And they say, no, we just pay taxes to the temple. We pay taxes, you know, we pay our tithes to the priests. You know, in the Old Testament, right, in the order of Melchizedek, you know, where Abraham had done that. And so that's what we're supposed to be doing. You know, why should we be paying tax to Caesar, especially this guy that's lording, you know, his authority over us? You know, our only authority is God. And you can see kind of like how religiously, you know, they kind of set their framework in that way. You know, I don't need to listen to you. You know, you're not my authority, you know, because God is my authority. You know, and how many times have we seen that in the church, you know, where people break laws and do these kind of things because, yeah, I just heard from God, you know, God is my authority, he is my source, and so forget whatever man-made authority, you know, has come about and happened in that way. You know, and then I think when you do that, you kind of walk in a very fine line because God also says, right, respect and obey your leaders, you know, and pray for them. You know, and so, right, there's another aspect. So, right, he comes with another perspective. And so he detects their trickery. And he says, show me a denarius. A denarius was a day's wage. Show me a denarius, right? So someone flips a coin to him and shows him a denarius. And he simply says, whose inscription is on this coin? He says, Caesar's. You know, and he simply says, you have to catch him. He says, then render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. But he says, but render to God the things that are God's. You know, what Jesus is saying is, the only thing Caesar can put his inscription on is a coin. Give him the coin, right? Big deal. You know, and I think he probably looked at every single person and says, but render to God the things that are God. Right? Caesar can only put his inscription on a coin. God has put his inscription on every one of us. We are made in the image of God. And he's basically telling these guys, look, you're asking the wrong question. This is just money. You know what I mean? Just give it to him. Big deal. But give your lives to God. You know, don't be playing these games anymore. You know, give your life to God. Right? Because he put his inscription there. Right? You are made in the image of God. You know, and so he comes and he gives them a totally different perspective. And they're just speechless. They're like, okay, we just got to be quiet. And now what happens, if you think about this story, because, you know, these guys move in flocks, right? You had the scribes, these guys, the lawyers, these guys were the experts in Mosaic law. You had the Pharisees, right? You know, kind of like the church leaders. You know, you had the priests, and then you had the Sadducees. And this is another, like, ruling class. These guys are a little more upper class, you know, more upper echelon in society. They're also teachers of the Torah, you know, but the distinction is they didn't believe in anything supernatural. They didn't believe in healing. They didn't believe in angels. You know, they didn't believe in the resurrection. You know, and so now, you know, Jesus has shut down the Pharisees. He's shut down the scribes. Right, I mean, he's come against all these guys, and now he comes, and it's almost like the Sadducees are like, oh, okay, it's our turn to shine, basically. You know, I mean, these other guys got wiped away, so, okay, Jesus, what do you think? And they give him a preposterous situation, right? You know, it's, look, we have one, you know, this one, one man married a woman, he died, and Moses says, right, so they're appealing back to the law, Moses says that if this happens, then the other son should take her as a wife. You know, this is kind of like a family, like kind of piety that they did, right? If you had an older brother or something and they passed away, you know, it was the duty of the younger son to take up the wife and thus carry on the family line. It would be like carrying on the family line of the older brother, right? The honored brother, you know? And so, and he does this, and she marries seven times, and they all die. I mean, talk about the kiss of death, huh? Right, seven times, every single one dies, and then she eventually dies. And so, because, see, remember, now they're thinking, there's no such thing as resurrection. The Sadducees, they just believe in annihilation. It's over, right? And so, what they're saying is, so, in the resurrection, right, they don't believe in that, but they're proposing this question because it's so preposterous. In the resurrection, whose wife is she? Because, you know, so many, you know, husbands, you know, died, seven of them. So, you know, they're asking this, and they know the answer, right? They know what they believe. You know, and Jesus comes and he just redirects another perspective to show them. He says, you know, in this age, you marry and whatnot. But see, in the age to come, in the resurrection, there's not a marriage, right? There's not, none of these things happen. In fact, he's saying that you don't really die, right? There is no death. And then he appeals to Moses, right? These guys are appealing to Moses. Jesus will appeal to Moses, right? And he says, look, even Moses showed us in the burning bush, and he calls the Lord the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. You know, and he's basically saying, look, you guys believe there's no resurrection. But how can that be? You've appealed to Moses. Even Moses himself said that I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I'm the God of the living, not of the dead. You know, he's telling these guys, look, I mean, just figure it out. You know, the one that you're appealing to, even he understood this very simple fact. Because if there was no resurrection, there'd be no reason for God to describe himself, right, as, you know, a part of these three sons. It just wouldn't work that way. And then they all sat and said, oh, answered very well. And he shut these guys up, right? And now, you know, they just kind of, you know, move upon their way. And, I mean, it was just such a ridiculous question. And then he comes and answers and asks them a question. You know, and of course, they have no response to this, right? He says, if David, you know, how is it they say that Christ is David's son? You know, I mean, how does this all work out? Right? And he's saying there must be a resurrection in this way. And then he gives them a warning at the end of this whole thing, right? Beware of the scribes who like to walk, you know, around in long robes and love respectful greetings in the marketplaces and chief seats in the synagogues, places of honor at banquets, who devour widows' houses and for appearance' sake offer long prayers. He says these will receive greater condemnation. You know, and he's just telling these guys, because now he's speaking to his disciples. He says, listen, be careful of these guys. I know that they're the respected people in the society. You know, and I mean, these guys, especially the disciples, they really respected these leaders. Because the other passages in the Synoptic Gospels, these guys, you know, Jesus will just come down hard on these guys. You know, and then, you know, Peter and John will look over to Jesus and say, Jesus, you know, I think they're offended at what you said. You know, and you know, and then Jesus would just pile it on even more, you know. And so these guys were kind of respected. And he's just telling these guys, look, be careful of this thing. And he's hitting on this whole theme of hypocrisy again. You know, they like these greetings. They like this. But, you know, their hearts are so black. You know, other words you'll see is these guys are whitewashed coffins. You know, a coffin looks good on the outside, but inside it's death. And he's telling his disciples, look, be careful of this type of religiosity. Be careful of this type of spirituality. Let's close our eyes today. The one thing that I get from this passage is perspective. I want to challenge you today to go before the Lord and ask the Lord for a different perspective. We may have all these different thoughts about God. We may have all these different thoughts about the church and our relationship with Him. Man, God is so good to give us His perspective. Right? Isaiah wrote that my ways, through God, my ways are higher than your ways. My thoughts are higher than your thoughts. And we don't want God to necessarily come down to our level. We want to go to God's level. So God, we want to reach the heavens and know your thoughts and know your perspective on things. Lord, if we're thinking wrongly, would you help us? I just want to challenge you to go before the Lord today and seek God for His perspective. Maybe we need some redirection. Let's pray.